The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi, this is Chris, and I am traveling for Christmas this year, and so this is going to be a repeat episode of Amateur Traveler. I picked one that I think you'll like, and so here's episode 691 about Bulgaria. Amateur Traveler, episode 691. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about craftsmen and churches, one last stand, communism, Byzantines, Ottomans, and Thracians as we go to the country of Bulgaria. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. With no further ado, let's talk about a road trip through Bulgaria. I'd like to welcome to the show Tom and Patty Burkett, who are coming to us from Ohio, but come to talk to us about Bulgaria. Tom and Patty, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hi there.
And what is your connection to Bulgaria?
Well, I have a cousin who's in the U.S. Foreign Service, and he's posted in Bulgaria currently and is married to a Bulgarian woman. And we decided to celebrate our 48th wedding anniversary that we would like to do a trip that was a bit more exotic than we usually do, and that since we had a connection there in Bulgaria and had heard on your show that Bulgaria is a country that is more like Europe might have been several decades ago, that it would be an interesting place to visit, and we discovered that that was absolutely true.
Well, I think that feeds into my next question, which is why should someone go to Bulgaria?
Well, interestingly, we got that question a lot from all of our friends and family.
I am not surprised.
And actually also from many Bulgarians who said, why did you come here? I think one of the really exciting things about Bulgaria is that it's on the crossroads of history. Mm-hmm. The Turkish Empire, the Roman Empire, communism. And so it's an absolutely fascinating location if you're interested in the development of culture.
I'd add two things to that. First, that we started out the trip by spending a couple or 3 days in Munich and Budapest and Vienna, and we were amazed at the difference in tourist fatigue between those cities and our visit in Bulgaria. In Bulgaria, we were the interesting thing that was happening to them rather than the other way around. Some people in small towns would go out of their way to call somebody up and say, hey, there are Americans here. Come look at them.
That's hilarious. Well, excellent. Well, what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
We spent more than 3 weeks driving around the country, and we prefer to avoid, for the most part, areas that are highly touristed. Mm-hmm. And we'd recommend starting in Velika Tarnovo, which is the old capital of Bulgaria, and driving through the country to the Black Sea coast and spending a bit of time there, and then driving on a much more southerly route and ending up in Plovdiv and taking some day trips from both Velika Tarnovo and Plovdiv.
Okay. Excellent. Well, let's start that in more detail. Now, you flew into Sofia.
Yes.
You did.
Yeah, we did.
And Patty has a good story about arriving there and the Cyrillic alphabet.
We knew ahead of time that we might not find people who could speak English, so we were prepared for that. And we knew, of course, that the Cyrillic alphabet was different. And we had done a little studying before we went, but pretty hard to get it in your brain. So we got there pretty fatigued after flying. I think we had to take two flights to get there. Anyways, we got in, we had to rent a car. We were getting to our Airbnb about dusk, and all of a sudden it hit us as we were trying to park our car, and we could not read anything on any of the street signs, except every one of them had a tow truck on the bottom of them. So we finally sort of figured out that said things like, well, it's 1900 to 8 a.m. So we figured, okay, it sounds like maybe you can park here overnight. And so we had to punt with some of that. And we did, I have to say, had a moment where we, between our fatigue and trying to park this car in a country we were really unfamiliar with, we looked at each other and wondered if we had bitten off more than we could chew. But we actually ended up within an hour of that, finding a friendly face at a restaurant who spoke English and who helped clarify that we had actually interpreted the sign correctly.
And we found a spot to park that was good to park at until 8 or 8:30 the following morning. And the following morning, we got down about 15 minutes before the deadline expired to discover that someone had parked behind us and the car in such a way that we couldn't possibly get it out. So we're standing there wondering exactly what we should do about that. And a woman got out of a nearby car that she was parking and pointed at the sign as if to say, you shouldn't park here after 8:30. And we were thinking that, boy, we would like to be able to get out of there if we could. Fortunately, maybe someone was looking from a nearby window, whoever was the owner of the car that had parked us in, and came back and moved it so we could get out.
Welcome to Bulgaria.
Exactly.
Indeed. And this was in Sofia. And we drove out of Sofia later that day and were not sad to see it in the rearview mirror for at least a few days.
Excellent. Well, you started us then in Velika Tarnova.
Yes. Velika Tarnova is the first capital of Bulgaria, and it's a beautiful city, and there's a large fortress there that sits up on a hill, and it has a sound and light show that operates most nights of the year. Occasionally, it's not working, but there's music and narration, and the city is situated on several hills. So we were on a hill that faced the castle, so from the balcony of our apartment, we were able to watch the light show at night. We couldn't hear the narration, but we could hear the music, and we could watch the lights change, and the fortress walls light up, and the castle keep light up, and it was very dramatic and interesting to see. But
all in Bulgarian, in terms of any. Okay.
Set off by the moon and the stars, it was romantic and fascinating. And we were able to stay in an apartment that was just along the craftsperson street there in Velika Tarnova, and all of the shops, the ones that weren't restaurants or little grocery stores, were operated by artisans who were wood carvers and icon painters and potters, and they all were all there practicing their craft. We could walk down the street and visit with them and see the things that they were working on, and it was really delightful. The street was overhung with umbrellas, so at night they had those lit, and it was very romantic as well.
I'm going to guess you're talking about the Samovodska Karshia complex.
Well, in Velika Tarnova, I would say that was an ideal location because it's a very hilly city. So you're able to do a lot of up and downhill walking. That was a good place to be at your central location because we could walk to those vendors. And then there were other places in the city we could drive to, but we felt that that was a great location to be centered in.
And were you finding that through Airbnb or through some local site, or how did you find an apartment in town?
Through Airbnb.
Yep. We did use Airbnb, and we did use some local connections for some of the lodgings we stayed in when we were there as well.
But not that one. That was Airbnb.
Right.
We found the Airbnbs we had good luck with them. Mm-hmm. The quality of them were described accurately. It was a little bit more rustic. If somebody's a high-end traveler, these were not that.
Okay.
It was what we were looking for. We were in somebody's home. We had our own area of the home with our own patio, but it was not a luxury, but it put us right where we wanted to be.
Excellent.
One thing that I'd note about Velika Tarnova is it is on hills. And so if you have any mobility issues, as we with our older joints sometimes do, the combination of hills and cobblestones is something you need to be careful of and something you'd want to pay attention to when you were choosing where you wanted to stay if you were visiting the city.
What else do we want to see while we're in Velika Tarnova?
While we were there, we took a couple of day trips. Mm-hmm. On one of them, we went to visit something called the Budluja Meeting Center or Budluja Memorial. It's a gigantic assembly center that was built during the communist era at a host Communist Committee meetings and looks like a flying saucer perched on the top of a mountain and has a big spire standing next to it. And then some monuments or sculptures that surround it at lower levels on the mountain. And it was really an extraordinary thing to visit.
I would have to say, of all the things we visited, it's one of the things that stands out the most. We had to work a little bit to get to it. You had to drive quite a ways to get to it. Scattered throughout the country, there's remnants of the communist era. There's a fair amount of communist era statues. Mm-hmm. And this place is crumbling in a sense now. There's some talk of trying to restore it. But because it's crumbling, it's almost a mysterious symbolic remembrance of the communist era. And it's huge. Mm-hmm. You come to it from a distance. You really can't imagine how huge it is until you actually are on top of it. So there's no visitor center. There's no people there. There were maybe six other people visiting it. I feel like you've accomplished something just getting there. And it was striking.
Well, and I'm just looking at some of the history of this, and it looks like the Bulgarians in 1868 fought what sounds like the Bulgarian Alamo there, if you will, where a small band of Bulgarians were defeated by a larger band of Ottoman Turks, and only four Bulgarians survived, but that helped spur the liberation of Bulgaria from the Ottomans 10 years later. So that's why the historic significance of this. But yeah, as you say, built not way back then, but built during the communism era.
Yes, the battle you're talking about is the Battle of Shipka Pass.
Okay.
The monument is built near the top of Shipka Pass. We approached on this trip from the north side of the pass. Mm-hmm. When we went out from Plovdiv on another day trip, which we'll talk about a little bit later, we went up to the southern side of the pass, and there's a church there that memorializes the battle and the people killed in it. And there's some interesting stories to tell about that. But that battle, which included assistance from the Russians, is important in Bulgarian history and cemented the relationship between those two countries that allowed for a lot of the things that happened in Bulgaria during the communist era.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay.
Bulgarians actually are pretty, certainly can't speak as a Bulgarian, but they had a warmer view of the Russians because they don't really talk too much about communism. What they talk about is the 500 years of Turkish rule. They call it the Ottoman yoke. And the Russians helped them through this battle and some other things, helped them defeat that and come out from underneath Turkish rule, that you see many, many sculptures around the country with the year 1868 on it.
Hmm. Interesting.
From Velika Tornovo, two other trips that are worth taking are to visit the Itar ethnographic village. And across Bulgaria, there are several ethnographic villages. They're living history centers. And each one has a different focus, but the Itar village is focused on crafts that are done using water power. So the entire village runs on a mill race that lets off water to a number of different businesses. And in each one of them, the water runs different kinds of things. There's a fulling mill. There's a sharpening place where tools can be sharpened. There's a leather working shop, several metal working shops. And in those, there are artisans practicing those traditional crafts as well. This is more of a tourist-focused center, but I would say more for Bulgarians than it is for people visiting from outside the country, so they can learn about their own national craft and history.
Hmm. Okay.
And the other place that we visited on a day trip from Velika Tornovo was Triavna. And Triavna is at the foot of a mountain pass, and a number of cities in Bulgaria at the foot of mountain passes got a special dispensation during the time of the Ottoman rule. If they were willing to protect the mountain pass from incursion, then the Ottomans would leave them alone to run their own business and run their own government. And so those cities were places where a lot of national history and culture were preserved because they were not subject to those Ottoman influences during that time. And Triavna is a center for icon painting and wood carving. And we enjoyed visiting a couple of places there that were really outstanding examples of wood carving art, including a house that was built for a merchant that had carved ceilings that resulted from a contest between a master carver and his apprentice. It's a really entertaining story, but it's maybe a little too long to get into here.
Okay. Where to next?
Oh, one more thing I could say about Triavna is that there is a national folk school there where they teach a variety of different arts. And one of the things we enjoyed while we were there was wandering through town and seeing groups of students everywhere out on the streets working on their class assignments. They were sketching or painting or studying wood carvings that were, or stone carvings that were parts of the buildings that were there in the city. And it seems very much like a town that has its own life. And we were able to walk through the school, and part of it is working as a school, and part of it is preserved, showing what the school was like a century ago. That was fun to see. And there's also a gallery there that has rotating exhibits of national artists, and that was fun to see.
Excellent.
After we left Velika Tornovo, we spent a few evenings there and then took these day trips. Then we drove east through the countryside, and our destination was the Black Sea coast. But on the way, we drove through the town of Kotel, which is a traditional center for weaving. And we were looking for a museum there that had both wood carving and weaving in it. And we first ended up at another national folk school that was had a big section that was under construction, and they chased us off and said, no, this isn't what you're looking for. We found the museum, and spectacular woven goods made from mostly sheep wool, some goat hair, dyed with natural dyes. And there were rooms that were covered with floor, wall, ceiling, and stacked up on every shelf you could see. And the variety of color was really an eyeful.
Now, I think it might be important to say, because when you describe that as a museum, a lot of things are, again, stepping back in time, they're rustic, they're not as developed, There's not the infrastructure. So this museum, which was full of lots of, like Tom says, really beautiful things to see, was really basically a two-story house.
It was a craftsperson's house.
Yep. With about four or five rooms, and there was not a lot of interpretive
signage
or anything. Mm-hmm. But again, I think when you go to a place like Bulgaria, part of it is the quest and being satisfied with yourself for finding these things and feeling like you're someplace that maybe not a lot of people have ever been there. Or you can't go in with Western expectations of, oh, I'm going to have wonderful signs that are going to tell me everything about what's here. It's partly the adventure of finding these things and then maybe using Google to look up what some of them are.
Or Google Translate to read the signs.
That's right.
And when you talk about a quest, I'm guessing that given you had trouble finding some of these places, that you decided that you have a love for craft and that sort of things, and that's why you picked out these places and were seeking them out. It wasn't just that you stumbled across these places.
Tom's a big planner before we go. Did a lot of research before we went. And so, yes, some of these towns we went to for that very reason, we'd heard, I'd say, a combination of the crafts work, but also culture. I think we have a real love of learning about how a culture developed, what part of the culture, what were the roots of what you're seeing today? Where did the culture that we're seeing today come from?
Mm-hmm. Probably for me, the two most satisfying things about this trip was, first of all, to learn about an entire history that I had not been familiar with before. Mm-hmm. I said when I came back that my world history education was sorely lacking because it ignored everything that happened in Bulgaria in the course of 500 years. And it's a really rich and interesting history they have there. And the other thing that I really enjoyed was the difficulty that we had in finding these places. And difficulties may be a stretch, but the work that you had to go to find them really gave us a sense that we were entering into the culture of this place rather than looking at a cultural picture that had been constructed for us by someone so that as Westerners, we could understand it. It was the real deal.
Mm-hmm. Where to next?
We went on along east to the Black Sea coast. And since it was our 40th wedding anniversary, we decided we were going to do something that was a wedding splurge. And so we went to the resorts and two resorts, Nesebar and Sozopol, along the Black Sea coast. And we didn't understand when we decided that we would do that, that these resorts are resorts from antiquity.
Oh, okay.
The first place we stopped in Nesebar was nicknamed the city of churches or the town of churches. And there were dozens and dozens of churches and chapels that had been built over 1,000 years, mostly having to do with the sea and the industry of voyaging and fishing. and the sailors who would go out never knowing if they were going to be coming back again, and the people who both mourned them and anticipated their coming back. But it's a very, very old town, and most of the buildings in it are constructed of stone, and some of them are ruins, and some of them are still in use. It's a relatively small area, easily walkable on foot. And when we pulled in, we got to a gate that said, oh, you're only allowed past here if you have a permit. So we called the hotel we were staying. They said, oh, yeah, you have to park in that parking lot and we'll send somebody down to get you. And that's one of the pieces of advice we'd give to anyone who's going there is make sure you find a place to stay that is in that Nasabur old town, because you can easily get around on foot, but it's difficult to get to in a vehicle.
Right, if you can even get in there. I mean, you have to have a pass to be able to get into the old town.
Hmm.
A less expensive option would have been to stay outside of the town and say, oh, well, we'll go in there for a day trip. But really, one of the charming things was being there overnight, seeing it quiet down for the evening, and then wake up in the morning. There are plenty of tourists who do come just for the day. It was quite special being there overnight.
And when you say it's more expensive by a Bulgarian standpoint, or?
Yeah, nothing was very expensive. I mean, that was one of the other fun things about going to Bulgaria. I guess we didn't say that was another reason to go.
Right.
Your money goes a long way, and so you get to do a lot of things style that you wouldn't normally be able to do them if you're somewhat of a budget traveler.
So what kind of budget would I need for this sort of thing, for instance, for the Black Sea Resort?
The most expensive place we stayed, and we stayed in an old hotel in a third floor room with a balcony overlooking the Black Sea, and I think it was $60 a night. It was one of the most expensive rooms in town.
Yeah. And we could walk from there down to the Black Sea. It was September, and it had been cold before, and it was going to be cold and rainy. I mean, not really cold, but the weather was going to shift. But that evening when we arrived, it was 90 degrees. And I was like, I am here. I am swimming in the Black Sea. And so we walked down to the beach there and we were able to swim in the Black Sea. And that was a thrill to be that close and have that as a possibility. Now, I will say, Tom said we chose to stay in the resort areas. I think it would be important to say, to not get confused, there are some modern resort areas that I would recommend not going to. What you want to do is see the old cities and be in these really unique locations. I think there's some high-rise beaches just down the road. For the type of travel we do, that would not have been as appealing as where we did stay.
And I didn't quite find where you stayed on the map. I know a lot of people talk about going to Varna, but you're further south.
Yes, it's Nasabur, N-E-S-S-E-B-A-R.
Okay. Got it.
And there's also a really great archaeology museum there. I mean, their history goes back to the Thracians who were there 5,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The range of history that you're also getting to see antiquities from is mind-boggling for an American.
Yes, we had advice from a couple of people that in some of the places we went, it would be a good idea to hire a guide. And we did here, and it was a man who was on the staff of the archaeological museum there.
Mm-hmm.
And he walked us around town to a couple of the old churches and told us about the history and walked us through the museum. And I don't know if other people are like me, but I began to get museum fatigue. And you see a lot of old pottery things and old stone things and old wood things. And pretty soon, you know, it's just another old pottery thing, even though it's, you know, even though it's a fascinating artifact from 5,000 years ago. And he was able to tell the stories of these things and really bring them to life for us. There was a display that showed types of anchors that had been used along the coast over the course of six millennia.
Okay.
And the oldest one there was a rock with a couple of holes punched in it and then sharpened sticks stuck through the holes. And he said, oh, yeah. He said, we took that out and tried it. It works really well. Oh, my gosh. These people from the museum taking these things out and trying them in the harbor. But one of the things we enjoyed in our time with him is that we had a long conversation about the Orthodox religion and about religious practices over the history of Bulgaria and how those had both influenced the culture and been influenced by the culture. So taking the opportunity to talk with a local person really gives you an opportunity to enrich your understanding of why a place is the way it is.
Well, and I think especially when it's a culture that you don't have a lot of knowledge about, and there were things that were foreign enough to us or confusing that we had questions that would come up. We would ask each other questions about, why do you think this is important? So to have a half a day spent with a smart local person to answer some of those questions.
Who could speak English, right?
was really nice. And on a longer trip like that, we were there for 3 weeks. It was a chance to ask some clarifying questions, which I would recommend a guide. It's not something we'd ever done before, and I wouldn't want one all the time, but it was helpful.
Well, and I was seeing that the reason you had mentioned this is a city of churches, and the questions asked, why are so many churches? And what we didn't say is this dates back to a time in the Roman Empire, what we now call the Byzantine Empire, after the fall of Rome, but they called the Roman Empire, where this was a place where the emperor would send people that had gotten in trouble with the emperor, but he didn't want to kill them. And so they were in exile here, and they all built their own family church because they were wealthy people who had gotten in trouble with the emperor. If you weren't wealthy, when you got in trouble, you got your head chopped off. And so that's why there used to be more than 40 churches on this little island.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. Well, we didn't hear that story when we were there, but that certainly does explain why there were so many of them. And by gosh, there were a lot of churches.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like not all of them even are in existence anymore there. So there used to be more.
A lot of them are ruins now. And we can move along from Nicephor. The young man we had as a guide there recommended to us we might want to stop in this town as we were moving south along the coast called Pomori, which was his hometown. He said there's a salt works there that's really interesting. And so we did. And we left Nicephor and we headed south. We were headed down towards Sozopol. And we stopped in Pomori and wound our way through an industrial area and through a bunch of these old communist 15 or 20 story cement apartment buildings.
Sure.
And out on a little isthmus that sticks out to the sea was the Pomori Salt Works. And these salt works have been in operation since the time that the Thracians were there and were operated to great profit by the Ottomans during their time. And much of the original equipment is still there and still in operation, made out of wood, hand-carved pegs, being operated by draft animals and salt harvesting ponds from the salt of the Black Sea. And so they've got a little museum there, which was not a particularly good museum in the sense that we weren't able to understand much of the displays that were in it. Mm-hmm. But it was really interesting to see the equipment and to see it operate and to bring home with us a couple of big handfuls of salt from the Black Sea.
Huh.
Our salt shakers are filled with salt from there now.
Indeed they are.
Ironically, you haven't heard the episode that the listeners will have heard last week, because it, from where we sit in time, it won't come out for 4 weeks. But we talked about the salt works in Taiwan just last week. So
interesting. Wow. Yeah. Well, salt was an important commodity.
It was. Your salary, whether you were worth your salt, both of those words in English talk about the value of salt in that time period.
So we went on down the coast from there to Sozopol, which is another historic fishing town. Mm-hmm. But it has, at least in our experience, a much more of a art sense to it. And there was a lot of contemporary work being done there by artists. And as you walked through the town, there were a lot of galleries and a lot of stunning views and a lot of really nice restaurants. It seemed to us a bit less historic than Nicephor, but still quite ancient and quaint.
You know, as you drove around or walked around the street that was the perimeter, pretty much everything was a hotel, and most of them had a really nice restaurant in them. So a lot of choices for nice dining, good seafood. And again, that was probably our most expensive meal.
Yeah, it probably cost $35 or $40 for the two of us to have a meal with several courses and two bottles of wine.
And
seafood. Delicious seafood.
And dessert.
And yeah, maybe the best thing we had on the entire trip was homemade ice cream that was made with figs and walnuts.
Oh, that was good.
We ate fresh figs for the first time on this trip. I had never seen a fig growing before, and they were really, really quite tasty.
You were thinking they just came in Newtons?
Yeah, that's right.
You're born of Newtons. So we enjoyed our stay in Sozopol, and it was rainy most of the time we were there. We had good views, so the sky wasn't too low, but it wasn't suitable for going out and getting into the water the way it had been in Nicephor. We enjoyed that. So we headed back inland, back toward Plovdiv, And along the way, we stopped in the city of Yambol, which I think a lot of people would miss if they weren't cultural explorers the way we are. And Yambol's attraction is that there's a 10th century mosque there and a market that was associated with the mosque or the culture that constructed the mosque. That neither one of them is still operating as originally intended. The mosque is closed and the market's been turned into a museum with some shops in it. But the mosque is stunning. And on a sunny day with the sun shining on that spire was really something to see. And the market is also very attractive. And the museum inside it is really interesting to see for two reasons. One is that there was a local archaeological expedition that found some really unique artifacts. And I can't tell you what they are because we saw too many museums on this trip. But the other thing that was interesting is they have their large display of kukri costumes. And kukri is a dance style that has a folklore that goes with it that's practiced in a couple of areas of Bulgaria.
Okay.
And the costumes and the masks for it are very elaborate. And in this museum, there are a number of costumes and masks dating from different historical periods. And they were really fun to see. And the woman who operated the museum when we walked in, there's a meeting room on the first floor of this market. And so we walked in the meeting room. There were some displays there around the wall, and we were looking at them. And this woman came over and said, well, would you like to see the museum? It cost 10 leva or whatever it was. And we said, well, is it worth it? And she said, oh, yes, it's worth it. She said, I'll walk you through. So the museum director walked us through the museum and told us a bunch of stories about it. And it really is very nicely laid out. It does have good interpretation and in English and a lot of really, really well-organized displays, including some very contemporary things that involve computer-generated imagery and buttons to push.
I think that's another example of what we said at the beginning about the lack of tourist fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
You walk into a place like that, and they're delighted that you're there. They have something they want to share. And if they speak English, they like the chance to practice their English.
Sure.
It's a charming feeling that you feel like they're really happy that you're there, and it's a nice feeling.
Well, and you mentioned masks, and I'm looking at some of the photos of the kukri masks, and they're not just face masks. They're whole elaborate heads in the decoration to look like animals to scare off evil spirits. It looks quite unique.
Yes, and some of the masks are 3 and 4 feet tall.
Right, they're more like headpiece.
Yeah, that's true. That's a better description. That's true. Hmm. Interesting.
We enjoyed that. And my cousin, who is there working with the State Department, said that they've had the occasion while they've been there to go to a couple of kukri festivals and see these costumes and masks being used in the actual festival celebrations. And he said it really is this, it's a spectacular thing to see.
Hmm.
If we ever go back to Bulgaria, we'll try to go at a time when we can see those festivals. That would be a treat.
Well, and it's interesting for me, as you've been talking, I've been looking at some of the photos and following along with you. I have the impression with some of the places you went, especially the Black Sea coast, we're talking about such charming cities that it's a little surprising to me still that it's more undiscovered. I don't know if you had the same reaction.
I definitely agree with that. I think that was one of the things we hoped for when we went to Bulgaria. And I think especially on the seacoast and Plovdiv, too, which is discovered.
Yeah.
You still feel like you've found something great that nobody knows about. And you're getting the chance to be there and see it. And actually, even some of the Bulgarians we met in different parts of Bulgaria, many of them said, oh, you're going places I've never been.
Huh.
And it's not that big of a country. I mean, it's about the size of Tennessee.
Okay.
But I think that maybe the people there don't travel from their own individual regions as much.
Uh-huh.
So many of the people we met were interested to hear about our experiences from other parts of the country.
Interesting.
It's like finding a place that where you are truly a visitor, where uh-huh. people are carrying on their everyday lives and doing what they always do. And you get to be there and be a part of that as opposed to participating in a culture that's focused on a tourist economy.
Sure.
Yeah, although those places were certainly there, mm-hmm. it was a tourist economy, especially on the coast. Might have also helped that we were there in September as opposed to the summer, especially when we were in Sozopol, there was a little bit of a dead feeling to it, which we didn't mind. I mean, we weren't really looking for nightlife type stuff,
yep.
but a number of the hotels looked like they were maybe closing down for the season. That's something probably to be aware of, depending on what time of year you're traveling and you're actually looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the other thing is, if I use the term undiscovered, I really mean from a U.S. point of view more. So this region was the hotspot before the Iron Curtain came down. If you wanted to vacation and you were in behind the Iron Curtain, the Black Sea coast was one of the places that you would go. And so it was probably very much hopping at the time, and then lost some of that tourism as people could had other options, basically. But it has been discovered, obviously, for, 2,000 years ago, but less well-known probably to this audience.
Yeah.
And we did hear, especially when we were in the Sabre, we heard a lot of people speaking Russian.
Sure, yeah.
Tourism flows east to west into that, probably into
Absolutely,
that.
Absolutely, yeah.
A little side comment to that is, when we were in the Sabre, we stopped to hear some music being played at a street cafe one night, and it was a Bulgarian singing an all Beatles program.
Okay.
And there was a table of very loud Liverpudlians who were encouraging the singer on and singing along. It seemed entirely out of context in a very funny way.
That's funny. Now, you had mentioned a story about a church you visited up in the pass when you were in the Plovdiv side of the pass, but you were going to tell part of that later, and I don't remember what you were going to tell later.
Oh, right. When we get to Plovdiv and talk about day trips from there, we'll talk about that, and we can move on to Plovdiv because okay. That's where we're headed right now.
Well, Plovdiv's just amazing. And I think, well, this year in particular, it was the cultural city for the EU.
Oh, okay. European capital of culture.
Yes, yes. And I think that's something important to know, that Bulgaria is part of the EU. So there are things, certain areas where you see sort of development money coming in.
Sure.
Which is, I think, making it more tourist friendly. And especially when you're driving, they use consistent road signage, with the rest of the EU. So there's some things about that that are helpful, So Plovdiv was all spruced up. This is its year.
And when you say this is its year, you mean 2019?
Yeah, that was 2019, but it's going to carry over in the sense that put some investment into the infrastructure and doing things up. I would say 2019, they probably did have a heftier schedule of activities than you might find now that 2019 is over. But Plovdiv has a grand pedestrian walkway right through the center of it. That's always fun. Parking was challenging. So once you found your spot, you didn't really want to get your car out unless you absolutely had to.
And we were able to find an Airbnb on that pedestrian street. So that's what we did. We parked the car and then we walked the rest of the time we were there.
Mm-hmm. And it sits on top of Roman ruins. And they've done a fascinating job of exposing them and incorporating them into the city. So as you walk down that pedestrian walkway, underneath that, there's an old Roman stadium.
Okay.
There's a big open area in the pedestrian walkway that has railings, and you get to look down into the amphitheater.
And you can walk down into it.
Okay. So this is the ancient city of Philippopolis.
Yes, yeah. It is.
Conquered by Philip of Macedon, the father of Alexander the Great. So you say Roman history even predating that by about 3 centuries. Interesting.
But these ruins are Roman era ruins.
Yep. Got it.
And they've done a beautiful job of preserving them, but it's not like you're going to a site. They're just part of the city.
Hmm.
The city's life just flows in and out of them.
Yeah. And then there's a big theater that's also part of the city. And that's an amazing story. It was buried. Landslide uncovered it in the 1970s.
Hmm.
And they have uncovered it and renovated it. And it's now an actual venue for musical performances and theater performances. It's open air. It's way up on a hill.
City.
And it overlooks the city with mountains in the background. I mean, it's beautiful.
Half the photos I see of Plovdiv are that theater. So definitely a stunning.
And rightly so.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And then there's a really cool arts district called the Kapana.
It means the mouse trap.
Yeah, because the streets are all short and crooked and so it supposedly feels like a mousetrap when you're in there that has lots of good restaurants and statues. We stayed right near there. It was a very accessible city. And again, with all of the Roman stuff, felt like something pretty special.
One of the things that Patty said about parking and driving just reminded me to say that I don't think anyone should feel hesitant about renting a car and driving in Bulgaria. The roads were excellent.
Mm-hmm.
The signage was good, even though it was in Cyrillic. And we didn't have any trouble as U.S. drivers getting around, finding our way. And there was, you know, there was no problem with police checkpoints or anything that would deter you from renting a car and taking a trip.
And
you should do it.
There's excellent internet, so you can pretty much count on using Google Maps.
Okay.
Like, even in really rural areas. Our cousin who works there and lives there said he has better internet in that country than he does when he's back here in the States.
Interesting.
And very inexpensive. We bought a Bulgarian SIM card when we arrived in the country, as we did in each of the countries we were visiting. And I don't suppose we spent $15 or $20 for a month's worth of high-speed internet access between the two of us.
That's like half an expensive meal.
The other thing that you need to know is that you cannot rent a car elsewhere in Europe and drive into Bulgaria, which is what we originally thought we were going to do.
Okay.
It has to do with insurance. We heard several stories. Somebody said the people outside of Bulgaria think the cars are going to get ruined if they when they're in Bulgaria. I don't know, but that's something people need to know. Yes. We flew into Sofia and then rented our car.
And we understood from the car rental agencies that you can rent a car in Bulgaria and drive out. But you can't rent a car out of Bulgaria and drive in.
Okay.
All the cars there are manual transmission.
Sure.
You can get automatic transmission cars.
Pretty much true in Europe. Yeah. By default, you would expect a manual transmission car, and you can reserve an automatic often, or a robot transmission. That was one I had recently, which is halfway in between, almost like an automatic, but not good.
Back in the 70s, Volkswagen offered something called an automatic stick.
Yeah, this is like that. Exactly.
From Plovdiv, there are three side trips that we'd recommend. One of them is to see the Thracian tombs in Kazanmak. And the Thracian tombs date back about 5,000 years. And this was a culture that came in from southeast of what's now Bulgaria and settled there in some of the fertile valleys and raised a lot of wine. And at least to hear the Bulgarians talk about it, drank as much as they raised because they were notoriously drunk Thracians. But the wealthy Thracians built tombs. And we went to visit the one in Kazanlak, which is probably the most well-known of them. Can't actually go into the tomb. The tomb's closed because they don't want to damage it, but they built right next door to it an exact replica.
Okay.
Four or five people would be cozy in there, but the walls are decorated with frescoes and the ceilings are painted, and it's really interesting to see, and you go through a little tunnel to get into it. And they have a few little displays of funerary goods that might have been found in those tombs. But there are a lot of those around that area of Bulgaria. As we drove on the roads, we saw their mounds, so you can recognize them as you're driving past. And we saw a good half dozen or eight of them. And the museum has preserved and operates four or five of those that you can go and visit on a schedule and with tour guides or without tour guides. So that was interesting. And then that was on the way to see the church in Shipka, which is on the south side of the Shipka Pass. This is a Russian Orthodox church. It's just what you would imagine. And again, if you look at pictures of Bulgaria, I'd be surprised if this wasn't one of the first two or three that popped up. The Shipka Church, which has the gold onion domes painted. And it has a massive set of bells that were cast from the bronze shell casings that were recovered from the Battle of Shipka Pass.
Okay.
The Bulgarian martyrs who died at the Shipka Pass battle are all interred in the crypt of the church. And the church is beautiful, and it sits on a hill. You can see it from quite far away, but you can also walk up to it and walk through it. And yeah, that was a remarkable thing to see and beautiful. And the third thing that we saw on our visit, and this was a guide that we had in Sofia, who took us from Sofia down to Melnik, to the wine growing region, said, well, you don't go without seeing Damascena, which is in the Valley of the Roses. And Bulgaria has been known historically as a center of the production of rose oil, used for cosmetics and a variety of other purposes. They grow roses there, and then they distill the essence out of the roses. And she said, go see Damascena while you're there. So we went to see it, and it is a project that's been funded by the European Union, and it is clearly intended to be a tourism generator. And so we drove up, not the worst roads. The worst roads we drove in Bulgaria were the ones up to Buzluja. But the second worst roads, I think, were the ones into Damascena. And at one point, we drove into a small town, and the road was closed and there was an arrow directing us out of town. And we followed the arrows and it literally took us out into a cow pasture with a herd of cows in it. And we were driving through the herd of cows until we got to following the arrows. And eventually it directed us back to the north side of town. They had closed the road all the way through town because they were doing some sort of excavating work. And then we drove on to Damascena and we drove onto the property. And it was a 6 or 7 acre asphalt parking lot, the likes of which we had not seen anywhere in the country.
Huh.
And the complex was the kind of thing you might find at an Orlando Universal Studios. It was grand and done in marble and gold. It had a pond with black swans and had a big building shaped like a basket that had restaurants on balconies overlooking the seals floor. And it was absolutely vacant. There was not a person there except us and 3 or 4 workers. And we went up to the gate to buy our pass to go inside. And this young man who was selling us our tickets, I said, "Well, could you show us around?" And he said, "I really can't because I'm the only person working and I can't leave the admissions gate here unattended." And this was a funny thing. His English was very good. And Patty said, "Well, your English is really good. Where did you learn it?" And he said, "In school? Where would anybody learn their English?"
That's an interesting generational thing. So people of a certain age, older than a certain age, all their second language is all Russian during the communist era. So generally, if you seek out the younger people, most of them will speak English. So if you're looking for help.
Yes. And if you're a younger traveler and are likely to be interfacing with people of that generation when you're there, then you're probably going to not have any difficulty finding people who speak English. But anyway, this complex, the Damascena complex, was really beautifully done. And it was interesting. It had good signage in multiple languages. The menus looked good in the restaurant. There was no one there serving it.
It was very strange.
They had elaborate statues and felt like a place completely alien to where it was located.
Right. And to be fair, I think it's intended, here in the States, it's like an apple orchard has a big clientele in October, but in March, they might not have so many people. So this was off season from the rose
harvesting.
Maybe there's a lot of people there in the spring. I don't know. There was definitely nobody there when we were there.
But it was strange. And driving through that cow pasture was even stranger. I can't do it.
Well, and that does raise the question of, it sounds like in many ways, where the time of year you went, which I think you said was September, was a good time to go. Is that when you would recommend people to go?
Well, I guess that really depends on what you want.
Sure.
Some of the big festival times, like the Rose Festival that happens in the area of Damascena, I think happens in June. And if that's the kind of thing that you enjoy, then you would have to go then.
Got it. Sure.
Like if you were interested in seeing the Kukri festivals, they happen at a certain time of year. But September, we chose in particular because we expected it to be a bit less busy.
Sure.
But to have good weather. And it was, we were very pleased with our experience in September. So if you're a tourist with the kind of expectations we had, it's a great time to go.
Yeah, the weather was good. It was not super hot. Not very many places probably have air conditioning. I guess we need to find that out, but my guess is they didn't.
Okay.
Some of the fancier places might, but I think it was a good time of year. It was getting cool. By the time we were leaving in October, it was the end of September, wearing, especially in the evening, needing jackets or sweaters or cool evenings.
Okay. Well,
in the Black Sea when it was 90 degrees, so it was a good,
Well, and we mentioned that this is part of the EU at this time, but it is not on the euro. It's still on the lev, as I recall.
That's right.
Well, anything else we want to say about Plovdiv? We need to start wrapping this up.
We haven't said anything about the food.
Okay.
Throughout the country, you can count on really good, it's a Mediterranean Greek influence. So there are great shopska salads.
Okay.
So everywhere you can go, you can get a great salad that's tomatoes, cut up cucumbers.
Sure.
With feta cheese over them. That was amazing.
No olives?
No, very few olives.
Oh, interesting.
Lots of feta cheese. Lots of feta cheese. When we went into a grocery store and what would be the equivalent of our whole deli case here at home was all different types of fetas.
Well,
I didn't know there were that many different types
of feta.
I
did not either, but everything's better with feta.
Yeah. And the other thing is the soup, which was called Territor, which is a cold cucumber soup.
Okay.
Truly delicious, too. And then there's a lot of meats.
Sausages, cut meats, good seafood. There's good seafood everywhere. Yeah. We had tripe soup as well. Tripe soup is very popular. It's maybe a national dish.
And we didn't say much about this, but there are Orthodox churches everywhere. So that's a big part of what you
see,
too.
And they're beautiful. They're grand. If you're someone who appreciates church architecture, they're worth seeing.
Excellent. As we go to wrap this up, you are standing at the prettiest spot you saw in Bulgaria. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Well, I guess I would have to say looking out across Plovdiv from that Roman theater.
Okay. Patty, different answer?
Another part of our trip, we were in the Rhodope Mountains.
Okay.
And we got to stay up in the Rhodope Mountains in a cabin, and it was beautiful.
Okay. Excellent. And one thing that makes you laugh and say, only in Bulgaria.
There's water everywhere. Water spigots everywhere. And it's good water. So in the city of Sofia, there's these hot thermal water, public water fountains that people go and collect water from day in and day out. They run 24 hours a day.
Hmm.
And in the countryside, we didn't figure this out until we got to talk to someone who knew. There were picnic areas around springs coming out of the side of the mountain. Somebody had tapped a spring and there was a spigot coming out with water running, again, 24 hours a day. And we found out it's a wonderful tradition of when someone dies in a family who's important to people, they tap a spring and build a little picnic area there. And it's maybe the equivalent of like an eternal flame for us.
Huh.
The thought of the water running forever in honor of that person.
Interesting.
People who live in the cities will go far out into the mountains to find a place where there isn't one of these spigots, and they'll build one there.
Yeah.
Huh. And then they'll maintain it, and their family will maintain it. And so some of them were very elaborate. We passed one that had a table that had a cloth on it, and someone told us, yes, somebody comes and replaces that cloth about once a month.
Huh. Interesting. And if you had to summarize Bulgaria in just three words, what three words would you use?
Friendly, surprising, and historic.
Okay. Patty?
Friendly, Orthodox churches as one word. And a deep history that I was completely unaware of before I got there. I know that's more than three words. Sorry,
we'll give you Orthodox and history. That's okay. Excellent. Our guests again have been Tom and Patty Burkett. And don't have a blog, so we won't send you off to their blog. Although, if you want to hear more of their voices, you can hear them talking about RVing in the U.S. on what podcast?
The RV Podcast.
And it's not our podcast, but we do a 5-minute segment at the end that's called Off the Beaten Path.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Bulgaria.
Thank you for running the podcast and providing us with such useful and interesting information, Chris.
Well, you're most welcome. In news of the community, again, I'm planning on launching a Patreon to help support the show and defray some of the costs of editing and those sorts of things. And there should be a link coming up as well as an email to the email list with more information about what you'll get as you support Amateur Traveler at various levels. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe.